In the epistle to the Hebrews, traditionally ascribed to the Apostle Paul, the teacher is trying to strengthen the people, to tell them to stay together and find courage through times of difficulty. He writes this letter, which is now enshrined in the Christian scriptures, as a sort of pep talk in troubled times, encouraging the people to never give up on one another. The community that found themselves receiving this particular epistle, this particular letter, find themselves in a pickle. They don't know what's going to happen next. They're scared and maybe even a little cranky, and the whole internal structure of their communal life feels a bit shaky. And as I say this, let me explicitly state that I am not drawing a direct parallel between their pickle and our situation. The ground beneath our feet is not shaky, and we are not waiting for something big and scary to befall us. We're just changing, that's all. But sometimes even just changing is stress enough to need a pep talk. And when these particular people in this particular place needed encouragement, their teacher in Hebrews 10:24 gives them this advice, which I think is important and pressing for us today. He said, "And let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, never neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another." He said, "Let us consider in this moment of change and anxiety how to provoke one another to love and good deeds." To provoke one another, he says. Not to whisper sweet nothings in one another's ears. Not even to comfort one another or make it better for one another or wash away our fear. Not even to dry each other's tears, he says, to provoke one another into love and acts of justice. Now, the Greek word being translated here from the scriptures is paroxysmon, and it's a root word for another fabulous word in the English language, paroxysm. A fit, a convulsion, an attack of emotion, even of anger. So what the apostle invites the people to do when they are full of fear and they are full of change and turmoil is not to comfort one another, but to give one another fits. To provoke one another, to aggravate each other into action and into love and into dedication and into commitment. And that, my beloved friends, my friends whom I will miss with every fiber of my being, that is what I believe that our congregation asks of us. That's the final challenge I want to leave you with. The fact is that this thing that we do here should not be easy. It must not be easy. If we agree with one another all the time and are not changed by our interactions here, if we are not provoked by this place into being better and more loving people than we previously were, we are doing it wrong. And when we or any faith community gathers on Sunday morning simply to be among people who think like you, or vote like you, or look like you, or dress and eat and shop like you, we are missing a great big part of the point. We come here not because we want to hang out with a whole bunch of people who will confirm our previously held opinions, but because we are called by the Spirit and by one another to be goaded into better, more loving versions of ourselves. We come here to this family of challenge and courage so that we might give one another fits until we finally see what we were meant to see in ourselves and in this world. And that act of blessed provocation is the holiest work that we do here. I believe in transformative worship. I believe that this thing that we do literally changes us. And I believe in the transformative power of beloved community, that who we are together creates us anew if we allow it to do so. I also know from experience that changing and being changed by one another isn't always easy. It has not always been easy for me, and it will not always be easy in the future. But in this place, for me and for so many of you, being vulnerable enough to allow ourselves to be provoked into change has always been a blessing. I believe in transformative liturgies, that worship changes us. And when I think on transformative worship, I come back in my mind to the afternoon of my ordination here at BRU in October of 2004. Many of you were here and will remember that day. We had a bagpiper walking the aisles, and it was every bit as loud as you imagine it would be. I was given this stole, and I am not making this up. As I was presented this stole, we read aloud the little card of all the symbolism and significance of all the elements of this stole created by Elaine Myers, who made it for me. And at one point she said, "You'll note there are two labyrinths at the level of your ovaries." True story. And this is known throughout the UUA as Nancy's ovary stole. It was an amazing day in more ways than one. And toward the end of that service, we had what was called the laying on of hands, in which Reverend Barbara Wells, who's a good friend of mine, said some kind of a prayer, the words or context of which I do not remember in the least. And my family and my colleagues each placed their hands on my shoulders and on my back, while each of you, in turn, placed a hand on the shoulder of someone whose hand was on someone whose hand was touching me all the way back through the sanctuary. Barbara kept on praying until we were all connected. And I don't remember if I began that process on my knees, but by the end of it, I know I was kneeling, because I was weeping so profusely I could barely stand. And what I remember most vividly there on my knees in this chancel was the enormous weight of it. That enormous weight was a burden and a blessing inherent in what was beginning that day. And I was full of hope and a little bit of fear, because I knew that from that moment, when you all touched me and blessed me, some things would never be the same again. Because you changed me. Because you did something that altered me when you called me here. You asked me, nay, you provoked me into a role that I had never held before, and a way of being that I now cannot imagine ever letting go of. You made me who I am. And I do not stand here today the same woman or the same minister that I was previous to that laying on of your hands. Not only in obvious ways, like the fact that I sort of know what I'm doing now, just in time to leave, but in deeper ways, I'm tougher now, in some moments even too tough, and I am so much less afraid than I was then. Less afraid of everything. I mean everything, from spiders to death to the capacity that I have inherent in myself. I am less afraid of all of it, everything, for having walked alongside and faced down fears with each of you. You have seeped into my soul. You have given me fits. You have provoked me to love and acts of justice that I never thought I was capable of, and on my best days, I have done the same for you. I've had lots of people in my office the last few weeks doing our good goodbyes. We've cried and sometimes just goofed off. and very often busied ourselves with the work of handing over this or that committee project or obligation. But over and over again since I announced my departure, what I have heard most often from the constant stream of people in my office is gratitude, and not even for anything concrete that I did, but because I have been there for you and with you while your life and your faith and the very ground beneath your feet shifted, never to be the same again. Gratitude that I have been there while you have become something new, or healed an old wound, or answered a calling that you didn't know you had. And that's how I know that these last 8 years we have been doing it right, at least more often than not. We have been doing it right together. Because not only am I not the same as I was 8 years ago, but you aren't either. And some of that change has been hard, and we have hung in there together. There are so many times over these years that we have provoked one another into transformation. In 2006, when we took on the Virginia Marriage Amendment, which would enshrine homophobia in the Constitution of this Commonwealth, we lost. But some of you found one another in that fight, and some of you learned in that work what it was to not give up. Individuals among you have been provoked to great transformation as well, when you have lost your faith and found it again in a new way. Or even more likely over these years, when you have lost your doubt only to be surprised by a faith you didn't know was there. They say that we preachers really only have one, maybe two, real sermons to preach. And whoever they are, they're probably right. They're all variations on a theme. Only the most creative of us has two actual themes, and I suspect that I have one. What I have preached to you over and over again, what I have preached to myself because I needed to hear it from this pulpit, is this one message: that we are not done yet. Doom spiro sparo, my Latin teacher taught me. While I breathe, I hope. While I breathe, I hope to become kinder, gentler, more loving, and braver. While we exist, we must evolve. We are not done yet. When you walked into these doors, it was not the end of your spiritual journey, but just the beginning. And each and every day we are called, indeed provoked, into something deeper and more honest than we have been before. While we breathe, we have the potential to choose love in a new way. While we breathe, we have the capacity to make amends and heal our wounds and answer our callings with greater kindness. While we breathe, we have the capacity to heal a broken world in greater ways than we have done before, and you are not done yet, and we are not done yet, and this is not the end of your journey, but the very, very beginning. And so this place and what we do here, it is not just for companionship. It is not just for friends. It is not even just for beautiful music. All of those are a part of the process. They are elements of the whole. They are necessary threads of the fabric. They exist to increase the likelihood that we might actually provoke one another to love in a different way, even when it hurts and especially when it's hard. And the hardest part of this work of holy provocation, by far, harder than all of the losses and new beginnings, harder than every way I have ever challenged you, the hardest part of this work so far is leaving. It makes me want to throw a fit, which is why it's probably a good idea to go now. I remember like it was yesterday, sitting at a computer in the library at the University of Chicago, typing out the words to my first newsletter column as your newly called minister here at Brew. I was about to get into the Penske truck and drive halfway across the country to meet you here. And as I said then in the August 2004 newsletter, we are both formed and forming. We are who we are, and we are becoming something new. In that newsletter column, I wrote these words: "Here at Brew, we are called to live always on the forming edge of our lives, to make our religious and spiritual home right there on the tenuous border between the unknown, where creativity and excitement and even fear keep us company, and the known places among those who keep us safe. We are called to live on the borderlands between the unknown and the known, between the road that stretches out and those that hold us tight right here." I could not agree with myself more. Here we are 8 years later, still dwelling on that tenuous border of the unknown, still able and willing to share our creativity, our joy, our sorrow, our fits. We have lived here on the border, always pushing, always growing, always beginning again for the entirety of our time together, and that is how I know we're doing it right. It has never been boring, and we have seldom held still for long, always looking for that new calling and that next expression of our values in this world. And that's exactly what we must do now as we go in our separate directions. Brew is becoming all over again, because it's never over, because your goose is never cooked. The adventure continues. I have been here for 8 years, which is not too bad when you realize that that's the length of a very successful presidential term. It's also 2 years shorter than the run of I Love Lucy, but 3 years longer than the run of the Brady Bunch. Both of which made significant impacts on transforming the world around them, don't you think? 8 years is plenty of time to change one another, to impact each other's souls deep down to the core, and it's not enough time to have ever slowed down for a moment, which is perfect. All these years, I've taught the new member class, which I randomly titled UU in a Nutshell, and almost every time I have begun those sessions with a reading from A. Powell Davies, which says this: "Let me tell you why I come to church. I come to church, and I would whether I was a preacher or not, because I fall below my own standards and I need to be constantly brought back up to them. I must have my conscience sharpened until it goads me to the most thorough and responsible living of which I am capable. I must feel in this place the love I owe to others. I must not only hear about it, but feel it, and in church I do. I am brought toward my best, in every way toward my best. You all have brought me toward my best, in every way toward my best. But I am not done yet, and neither are you. Dig beneath the surface. Uncover the sources of your hope. Call yourself on your rough edges. Forgive one another when you fail. And don't be afraid to begin a thought, as I often do, by saying, I might totally disagree with myself, but... And be willing to actually change your mind if someone offers a real contrary opinion. We are a place of blessed provocation, my friends. And it was never meant to be safe. It was never meant to be quiet. It was never meant to be gentle here. They should issue us crash helmets and life preservers when we walk in the door of this holy place, because it is meant to be bold, and it is meant to be transformational, and it is meant to be full of grace that we cannot contain and cannot own and cannot protect ourselves from. So go forward from here and give each other fits. Provoke one another to ever greater compassion, and allow yourself to be provoked by the people who will fill this pulpit in the years to come. Go forward from this moment willing to be changed and willing to change. For every day will shed some new light, some new responsibility, some new provocation along your way.